It's now then my pleasure to ask Brother Matt to speak to us on the subject of Habakkuk.
Well, good evening, everybody. So we're going to talk about Habakkuk then, an obscure prophet, a little book hidden away in the middle of a group of minor prophets. We don't know anything about Habakkuk. We don't know who he was, really. We're not told anything about his family. We can guess that he was almost certainly a Levite and probably a singer. We know from the very end of Habakkuk chapter 3 and verse 19, that Habakkuk speaks of his own stringed instruments, which suggests that he was probably a Levite. But beyond that, we don't know anything else, and there's not really a lot of point in trying to drag anything else out. In terms of when Habakkuk wrote at a time when God was raising up the Chaldeans, we are told in verse 6, a time when Babylon were a minor nation, but were growing in power and importance and influence in the Middle East. It's a time that we've also read of, the beginning of Habakkuk chapter 1, when the people were against God. The majority of the people were against the commandments and the laws of God. And we can put the prophecy of Habakkuk generally within, probably within the reign of Jehoiakim, certainly towards the end of the Judah's existence within the land before Nebuchadnezzar came and took them away, somewhere 40-50 years before that time. Habakkuk himself is a questioner. He asks questions. We read, didn't we, this first section in Habakkuk chapter 1 that runs from verse 2 down to verse 4. It's a question from Habakkuk. Habakkuk is questioning God as to what he sees around him, as to what is going on. From verse 5 then, God gives Habakkuk an answer. And he directly responds to the things that Habakkuk says, we're going to see. And then from verse 12... Habakkuk again questions what is going on. How does this fit? How can we understand what God has revealed in connection with the character and the purpose that we know God has? That's chapter 1, and that's what we're going to look at this evening, God willing. And then there are two more talks in a fortnight which are going to consider Habakkuk chapters 2 and 3. Right. Keep something in Habakkuk, but I want you to open to Psalm 13, please. Because Psalm 13 is going to act as our introduction. It's going to tell us what Habakkuk is about. It contains the same questions, the same problems, and it contains the same answer and the same response. And it's going to show us what we're going to see as we go through the prophecy of Habakkuk. Psalm 13 then, a psalm of David. Verse 1, how long wilt thou forget me, O Yahweh, forever? How long wilt thou hide thy face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart daily? How long shall mine enemy be exalted over me? Consider and hear me, O Yahweh my God. Lighten mine eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. Lest mine enemy say, I have prevailed against him, and those that trouble me rejoice when I am moved. But I have trusted in thy mercy. My heart shall rejoice in thy salvation. I will sing unto Yahweh, because he hath dealt bountifully with me. And that psalm, the psalm of David, David begins by questioning, doesn't he? How long? How long is God going to refuse to look upon the tribulation and the trial that is occurring? It is a request for a response. Consider in verse 3 and hear that the word means to answer me. And it is an assurance, a celebration of the fact that God is trustworthy. I have trusted, in verse 5, in thy mercy. My heart shall rejoice in thy salvation. And all of these things, all of these ideas, Habakkuk is going to come back to consider. We saw how Habakkuk begins with this questioning. How long? How long, says Habakkuk in verse 1 of chapter 1, shall I cry? In verse 4 of Habakkuk chapter 1, the answer, Habakkuk's response to himself, the law doth never go forth. That word never, it's the same word as forever in Psalm 13 and verse 1. The law is slacked, the wicked doth compass the righteous, says Habakkuk. David says in verse 2, how long shall mine enemy be exalted over me? In verse 3 of Habakkuk chapter 1, Habakkuk asks, why dost thou, middle of verse 3, cause me to behold grievance? And it's the same thing that's going on in Psalm 13. The word consider in verse 3, it's the same word as behold. Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 2 tells us that God answers, that God responds, which is what David in verse 3 of Psalm 13 is asking for. David says in verse 6 that he is going to sing. And that's what Habakkuk chapter 3 is, Habakkuk's song. And then in Psalm 13 and verse 5, David says he will rejoice in thy salvation, the salvation provided by God. And that's exactly how Habakkuk ends. Habakkuk chapter 3 and verse 18, Habakkuk says, I will rejoice in Yahweh, I will joy in the God of my salvation. And so we've got in Psalm 13, we've got this little microcosm, this little picture of what we're going to see as we consider the prophecy of Habakkuk. The questioning attitude of a servant of God as he sees the wickedness around him. God's response to that question. And then Habakkuk and David's utter reliance in the answer that God has given. So, we're going to have a look then. Habakkuk chapter 1, we're going to start in verse 2. Habakkuk says, O Yahweh, how long shall I cry, and thou wilt not hear? Even cry out unto thee of violence, and thou wilt not save. Why dost thou show me iniquity and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that raise up strife and contention. Law is slacked, judgment doth never go forth. The wicked compass about the righteous, wrong judgment proceedeth. And it is a picture, isn't it, of a wicked world. It's a picture of our world. It's a picture of the world and the age that we live in. And yet, it's Israel. It's the people of God. It's the people to whom God's purpose was revealed. And Habakkuk is wondering at how that can be the case. How is it possible that God's people can have fallen so far? And what is God going to do about it? How long shall I cry and thou wilt not hear? He says in verse 2. And it's a question that is asked, isn't it, throughout the ages. Just come and have a look at Exodus and chapter 16. Exodus chapter 16 and verse 28, a slightly different asker. We've got God who says to Moses, how long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws? It's the response, isn't it, of God to the wickedness of Israel in Exodus chapter 16. And it's still going on. Habakkuk is asking the same question. how long are Israel going to refuse to keep the commandments of God, and specifically, how long is God going to go without responding to them? And we know, don't we, brothers and sisters, we can see in the prophecy of Habakkuk, one of the great lessons of Habakkuk's prophecy is that God does hear, that God does respond, that God does care, that God does see. God hears our prayers. And it was the case for Habakkuk that he didn't get the answer that he was looking for. Habakkuk didn't get the answer that he expected. Habakkuk didn't get an answer that he thought was possible. Habakkuk didn't understand how God could act in that way. And sometimes we don't understand, do we? Sometimes we get an answer and there is a response and we can see that, well, we asked for this thing and it's come about, but I don't know how it happened, or and I can't understand why now I'm in this situation. And yet we're going to see, as we carry on through Habakkuk, through chapters 2 and 3, that it is all within the purpose of God and that there is only one end. Now we get this word in both verse 2 and verse 3, the word which is translated violence. Habakkuk says he cries out unto thee, unto God, of violence in verse 2. And he says in verse 3, spoiling and violence are before me. Just come and have a look at Micah in chapter 6. Micah chapter 6 and verse 9 says, Yahweh's voice crieth unto the city, and the man of wisdom shall see thy name. Hear ye the rod, and who hath appointed it? Are there yet the treasures of wickedness in the house of the wicked, and the scant measure that is abominable? Verse 12, for the rich men thereof are full of violence, and the inhabitants thereof have spoken lies, and their tongue is deceitful in their mouth. Now Micah was writing about 80 to 100 years before Habakkuk. And it was the same situation. Israel were in the same state. God was waiting. There was violence within Israel. And we can see, when we consider especially the record of Noah, that God hates violence. But he waited for Israel. He waited and gave Israel an opportunity. And the question is, brothers and sisters, how long will God wait? And how long is God waiting for us? We know, don't we? Just as God says to Habakkuk, there are judgments coming. God only waited so long. Israel couldn't continue to be as wicked as they were without God responding. And it's the same for us in our situation, in our world. Why, says Habakkuk in verse 3, dost thou show me iniquity and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me. Now, and there are, at the end of verse 3, that raise up strife and contention. It's interesting, that word strife is a word which means specifically to go into legal dispute. There were people who were going to court against each other. There were people who were taking each other to court, trying to drain them of money. And so in verse 4 we're told that the law is slacked and judgment doth never go forth. People were taking advantage of the system. And so the law of God, God's law, was ignored. The word slack means feeble or weak. Rotherham translates it as benumbed. It had no power, it had no teeth. People didn't care about the law. And because people weren't caring about the law, people didn't care about what the commandments were, then judgment didn't go forth. Judgment didn't come because people didn't know what judgments to make. And the wicked, we're told in verse 4, compass about the righteous. They surrounded them, and it's a picture of the majority, isn't it? There were isolated instances of righteous people amongst a multitude of wickedness and evil, amongst a multitude of the wicked. And it's a picture, isn't it, that we see again and again and elsewhere. It's a picture of the Lord Jesus Christ, isn't it? Psalm 22 tells us that there was this one righteous man surrounded by the wicked. And it was the case in Habakkuk's day. And Habakkuk is just despairing. And we can as well, can't we, brothers and sisters? It is a desperate, desperate world that we live in. And we can look around and we can ask, how long? And yet we can be confident, brothers and sisters, that something will be done. And God answers Habakkuk. Verse 5 of Habakkuk chapter 1, behold ye among the heathen, and regard and wonder marvellously, for I will work a work in your days which ye will not believe, though it be told you. And just look, that word behold there in verse 5 is the same word as show in verse 2. Verse 3 of Habakkuk chapter 1. Why dost thou show me iniquity and cause me to behold grievance? That word regard there in Habakkuk 1 verse 5 is the same word as behold in Habakkuk 1 verse 3. And so what God is doing is directly answering him. You see iniquity. You behold grievance. Well, look at the heathen. Behold the heathen. Regard. Don't look at Israel. Don't look at the wickedness in Israel. But look elsewhere. Because that's where the answer is going to come from. Wonder marvellously is a Hebraism, it's a repetition. It's a repetition of the Hebrew word, which means to wonder, basically. Just have a look at Isaiah and chapter 13. Isaiah chapter 13, we know from verse 1, is the burden of Babylon. It is the punishment on Babylon that God will send because of what Babylon will do, because of the way in which Babylon will go beyond the commandments of God. The destruction of Babylon comes, and we know that the burden carries on into chapter 14. But just look at verse 8, where we are told that they shall be afraid. Pangs and sorrows shall take hold of them. They shall be in pain as a woman that travaileth. They shall be amazed one at another. Their faces shall be as flames. Behold, the day of Yahweh cometh. That word amazed, it's the same word. They shall wonder. And so, even now, even here, right at the beginning, before God has even gone on to explain what's going to happen, the answer is there. The same punishment was going to come upon the Babylonians. The same response to what was going to happen to them would come on the Babylonians as Habakkuk saw, or Habakkuk felt when he saw what Babylon were going to do. And then God says in verse 5, I will work a work in your days which ye will not believe, though it be told you. Just come to Acts in chapter 13, because this is quoted by the Apostle Paul. In Acts chapter 13 and verse 41. Acts 13 verse 40, Paul says, "Beware therefore lest that come upon you which is spoken of in the prophets. Behold, ye despisers, and wonder and perish, for I work a work in your days, a work which ye shall in no wise believe, though a man declare it unto you." There was going to be another work, is what Paul is saying. Just like when the Babylonians came and destroyed Jerusalem and took away the people, it was going to happen again, and they weren't going to believe it. Just like the people in Habakkuk's day, just like the people in Jerusalem at the time, just like the people who went to Jeremiah and said, "It's not going to happen. The prophets have said we're going to be all right. Hananiah has spoken up and said, Jerusalem isn't going to fall. God is with us. We're going to be okay." No matter how many times Jeremiah said, "No, no, really, you're not." And Habakkuk says, "No, no, look, the Chaldeans are coming. God showed me that's what's going to happen." The people stood there and said, "We'll be all right." And no matter how many times Paul said, "The Romans are coming," no matter how many times people considered the words of Christ, when he said, "The Romans are coming, get out," the Jews didn't believe. They didn't respond. They didn't listen to the word of God. And again, brothers and sisters, we can think about ourselves, can't we? What about us? God has said what is going to happen. God has said what is coming on the earth. God has shown us. It's not hidden. It's not secret. It's plain. The judgments are going to come upon the earth. Habakkuk says the judgments are going to come. Paul was saying the judgments are going to come. The people looked and said, "We'll be all right. We're actually quite enjoying life at the moment. Thank you very much." And what about us? The judgments are coming. How will we respond? And so God tells Habakkuk exactly what he's going to do. He gives him this incredibly detailed picture of what is going to happen. Verse 6 of Habakkuk chapter 1. "For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, a bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs." That word hasty, Rotherham translated as headstrong. The Amplified Bible has impetuous. These are the characteristics which were going to bring Babylon down against Israel. These were the characteristics that were going to cause Babylon to come down. And that word bitter, the bitter and hasty nation, it's the word that's used of Esau in Genesis chapter 27. In Genesis 27 and verse 34, where it says, "Esau heard the words of his father, and he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry, and said unto his father, Bless me, even me also, O my father." And we can see, can't we, in this description of Babylon, the bitter and hasty nation, that was what Esau was like. He was bitter. He cried out bitterly. And he was hasty. He was prepared to sell what he had, to sell his birthright, to sell what was important, because he didn't think he'd last the day, and then what did it matter at all? "Just give me the food. You can have what you want." It was the attitude, wasn't it, of Esau, that one who was so implacably against Jacob, that he ran and fled to learn to trust in God. And we're going to see those ideas are going to come out in the prophecy of Habakkuk. But they come, it says at the end of verse 6, to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. Now that word "dwelling places" is the Hebrew word that's used for the tabernacle. It's translated tabernacle 119 times. Young's Literal translates it here as the tabernacle. And just note that the word is plural. And we're being told what had gone wrong. They were coming to possess the tabernacles, the places of worship that Israel should have had only one of. Israel should have only had one place to approach God. And yet there were tabernacles, false places of worship, that the Babylonians would come and find and use for their own gods. They were going to possess them and use them for their own gods. Israel had lost sight of the worship of their own God and had gone after other gods. And then we're given a description in verse 7, 8, 9 and 10 tells us the attitude, what Babylon were going to do, how they were going to do it, and what they were going to be thinking at the time. They are terrible, it says, and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. Their horses also are swifter than the leopards and more fierce than the evening wolves. And their horsemen shall spread themselves and their horsemen shall come from far. They shall fly as the eagle that hasteth to eat. They shall come all for violence. Their faces shall sup up as the east wind. And they shall gather the captivity as the sand. They shall come, in verse 9, all for violence. And isn't that interesting, brothers and sisters? It's the same as what Habakkuk was complaining of. In verses 2 and verse 3, they were coming for violence. Violence that they were going to inflict on Israel because there was violence there. Israel chose their punishment, didn't they? Israel chose the end result. Israel were responsible for the coming of the Babylonians. It was an appropriate response to the situation in Israel. They shall come for violence. And again, brothers and sisters, the same thing applies to us, doesn't it? Because we make our choice, we make our decision in what we do and in how we live now. And we can decide whether or not, or we can decide how it is our end will come. We can decide whether we are in the kingdom, whether that is how we have tried to live, whether that is what we have tried to do. Or we can decide whether we will ultimately suffer the fate that the world suffers by going along with what they do. Israel were violent. They exhibited the characteristics that Babylon were going to show to them. And so they earned that response. Verse 9 then goes on to say, their faces shall sup up as the east wind, and they shall gather the captivity as the sand. Now, it's not easy to understand exactly what's going on here. Revised Version has, their faces are set eagerly as the east wind. Rotherham has, the intent of their faces is towards the east. And it seems to be a picture of the fact that Babylon are going to come, they're going to destroy, they're going to take captive, and then they're going to remove the people out of Israel and return them to where the Babylonians had come from. Their faces were east. They'd come to Israel, but they were going to take them away. They were going to take them back. They will come rushing in eagerly from the east, coming to take prey back to Babylon. And note that their captivity is as the sand. Genesis 21 and verse 17, please. I wouldn't bother going to Genesis 21 verse 17 because it doesn't say what we want it to say. But the link, I'm sure you're all clear on and familiar with, is to the promises to Abraham. When Abraham was told by God that the nation which would come from him would be as the sand which is upon the seashore. Stars of heaven, sand on the seashore. That was what Israel was going to be like. That was the potential that they had. That was what they could have been like. God made Israel as the sand. But they turned their back on him. And so he sent the Chaldeans, who scooped them up like sand and took them away back to Babylon. They shall gather the captivity as the sand. Verse 10 tells us the Babylonians would scoff at the kings and the princes. They shall be a scorn unto them. They shall deride every stronghold, for they shall heap dust and take it. Just come and have a look at 2 Samuel in chapter 20. Because this is a description of the way in which ancient armies, ancient kingdoms would take cities. In 2 Samuel chapter 20 and verse 15, it's not concerning the Babylonians themselves, but it gives us a description of this process. We're told that they came and besieged him in Abel of Beth-Maacah. They cast up a bank against the city, and it stood in the trench, and all the people that were with Joab battered the wall to throw it down. They cast up this heap. They heaped dust by the side of the city to give them a ramp up, basically, so that the wall wasn't such an obstacle. We get the same picture in 2 Kings chapter 19 that we're not going to look at. This was what the Babylonians were doing. This was how they were going to take the cities in Israel. And we're told that they would scoff and that they would deride in verse 10. Now that word deride is the word from which the name Isaac comes. It's the Hebrew which forms the root of the name for Isaac. So we've had, haven't we, a reference to Abraham, the son. We have this reference to Isaac. We have the reference to Esau. And it's all to get Habakkuk to consider the potential. How Israel could have been. What God had promised to Israel. What God had said Israel could have had. The fathers of Israel. And it's all crumbled and fallen. Because Israel hadn't walked after their example. Israel hadn't walked in their faith. And we know, don't we, that when the time comes, when Christ returns, when Elijah is gathering the Jews, this is how they're going to be. This is what they're going to be taught. The heart of the fathers to the children and the children to the fathers. It's Abraham, Isaac and Jacob who are going to be there as the examples. And Israel are going to be taught to be like them. And Habakkuk is being shown what's gone wrong. He can see it. He knows. He's seen the violence. He's seen the iniquity. He's crying out against it. And God is saying, well, this is how far they've come. Just contrast the lives of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob with the lives of the Jews that you see around you. But verse 11 tells us what is going to happen to Babylon. It tells us how Babylon are going to be affected by the conquest which they perform. Then, says God, shall his mind change, and he shall pass over and offend, imputing this power unto his God. He was going to change. He was going to have a difference in the way in which he understood. He was going to say that it was according to the power of his gods, the gods of Babylon, that Israel had fallen, that Egypt had fallen, that the nations of the Middle East had crumbled before the Babylonian power. Whilst Nebuchadnezzar was simply conquering Israel, he was God's servant, wasn't he? Performing God's will, working under God's direction. But as soon as he imputed the power to his gods, as soon as he started to consider his gods as being the power behind his conquest, then he offended. And just remember Daniel chapter 5. The swift judgment that came on Belshazzar that night when he decided the best thing to do would be to take the pots and the pans from the temple to use them in his own feasting. The judgment that came on Belshazzar when he blasphemed Yahweh, when he trusted in his own gods. And that's what Babylon would that's what would happen to Babylon. That's what Babylon would become like. And God is setting up, if you like, what he is going to say in response to what Habakkuk offers to him at the end of chapter 1. God is giving the foundation for then his response. That's what happened to Babylon. And I wouldn't stand for that. But it's in verse 12 that Habakkuk then comes back in. In verse 12, Habakkuk then says, well, okay, that's what's going to happen. And I want you to note that Habakkuk doesn't doubt that that's what God is going to do. Habakkuk doesn't say, no, that's not what's going to happen. That can't be what's going to happen. Habakkuk just doesn't understand how that it can fit with what he understands of God. Habakkuk never says, no, you're not going to do that. Habakkuk just says, well, how can you do that? Habakkuk was a trusting and a faithful man. His questions didn't come from the fact that he didn't believe God. His questions came from the fact that he understood who God was and didn't know how that could fit with the situation he saw around him. And we can have the same trouble, can't we? We know who God is. We trust that God will perform what he has said. But how can God possibly put up with what's going on? How can God possibly continue to be long-suffering in the face of the provocation which is continual? Habakkuk's is a faithful response. He says in verse 12, art thou not from everlasting, O Yahweh, my God, mine Holy One? The Babylonians ascribe the victory and the power to their gods. Nebuchadnezzar is going to come and say, Marduk has done this. So Habakkuk ascertains and confirms that God, his God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel is the only true God. And just note that Habakkuk is, he shows an attitude of deference, doesn't he? My God, my Holy One. Habakkuk shows that he understands God's character. He doesn't understand how that can fit with what God has just prophesied. And then he says, we shall not die. And there are two ways of understanding this. There are two, historically and traditionally, there have been two ways of putting this together. That it really says what it says, that Habakkuk did say, we shall not die, and that what he's referring to is Israel. That what he's referring to is the fact that Israel are linked to God's name. He is God, he is Yahweh, he is their Holy One. And so therefore they would continue for as long as that name continued. Israel were contained within the promises. And so they would carry on. Israel would not perish as a nation. And the other way is to say that that's not actually what Habakkuk says. Rotherham and the Companion Bible say that this was a change, that what Habakkuk says was, thou shalt not die, and you'll note if you've got a revised version that that's what they say in the margin as well. That Habakkuk says, thou shalt not die, and so, therefore, that's what Habakkuk is saying. That Habakkuk is continuing this sort of response to God. and it relates back to the beginning of the verse where Habakkuk says, "Art thou not from everlasting?" Two ways of looking at it. You can choose the one that you like the best. I prefer number one, personally. I think that's what Habakkuk is going for. I think that fits in with the tenor of what Habakkuk understands. It fits in with the way in which we've already had Abraham, Isaac and Jacob brought before us. God has already caused Habakkuk to consider the promises that were made and the link, therefore, that Israel had to his name and the certainty that Israel would continue. And that's how I see it. There are different opinions, if you want one of those. The end of verse 12. "Thou hast ordained them for judgment, and, O mighty God, thou hast established them for correction." Now, the phrase "mighty God" is the Hebrew word for a rock. It's the title of God that is used again and again, where we are told that God is a rock. And I would suggest that Habakkuk is quoting, he's making a quotation, an allusion back, and he's making an allusion back to the end of Deuteronomy. Come and have a look at Deuteronomy in chapter 32. Deuteronomy 32 and verse 4, where Moses is inspired to sing, "He is the rock. His work is perfect. All his ways are judgment. A God of truth and without iniquity, just and right is he." And it fits, doesn't it, with what Habakkuk is trying to say. Habakkuk is trying to claim, well, you can't possibly do this because of your character, because of who you are. You've ordained them for judgment and established them for correction. Deuteronomy 32 verse 4 says, "You're the rock, you're the God of truth, you're without iniquity, you are just and you are right." How can it be just and right for you to do this to Israel with the Babylonians? Send your fire down on us, judge us, but not like that and not with them. It doesn't fit. And it's interesting to note that this isn't the first time and this isn't the only time that Habakkuk is going to make reference to this section, this portion of Deuteronomy. Habakkuk chapter 1 verse 8 mirrors fairly closely Deuteronomy 28 verse 49, for instance. Habakkuk chapter 1 and verse 11 sits and sort of is influenced by Deuteronomy 32. Verses 26 and 27. Habakkuk 2 and verse 4, which we aren't there yet, but that draws from Deuteronomy 32 and verse 20, which talks about children in whom is no faith, which is a contrast to the just living by his faith in Habakkuk 2 and verse 4. In Habakkuk 3, we've got a link back to Deuteronomy 33 and verse 2, and we have another link in Habakkuk 3 verse 19 back to Deuteronomy 32 verse 13. So I don't think it's wrong to say that when Habakkuk draws on this title of God and says mighty God or thou O rock, he isn't drawing from Deuteronomy 32. I'm fairly sure that he is. And in verse 13, Habakkuk then details exactly why he can't understand. "Thou," he says in verse 13, "art of purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look on iniquity. Wherefore lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously, and holdest thy tongue when the wicked devoureth the man that is more righteous than he?" And that's the nub of Habakkuk's confusion. How can it be right, when they're even worse than we are, that you would use them to judge us? We're bad. Habakkuk isn't saying that Israel are a righteous nation by any means. He's gone through the list of things that are wrong. But they're even worse. They're Babylon. They're Gentiles. They're heathen. They're not even Jews. How can that be right? And there are a number of ways in which it is absolutely and exactly right. We're told, for instance, at the end of verse 13, Habakkuk is confused about the fact that the wicked are devouring men more righteous than he. It is a characteristic of wicked people to devour men. And yet we just read on Sunday in Ezekiel about the fact that the kings of Israel were people who did exactly that, who did devour men. It was Ezekiel in chapter 19, wasn't it? Ezekiel chapter 19, this parable of Israel, of Judah as a lioness, bringing up princes, bringing up kings. And on two occasions, in verse 3 and in verse 6, we're told very specifically that these kings who came about, the young lions brought up by Judah, learned to catch the prey and devour men. And it's exactly what Habakkuk says, or what God says concerning Babylon. Their kings were doing this. It was absolutely right that God send this nation who devoured people to swallow up an Israel full of men who devoured people. And so Habakkuk then goes on to say what it is that the Babylonians do. Verse 14, they make men as the fishes of the sea, as the creeping things that have no ruler over them. They take up all of them with the angle. They catch them in their net and gather them in their drag. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they sacrifice unto their neck and burn incense unto their drag, because by them their portion is fat and their meat is plenteous. Shall they therefore empty their net and not spare continually to slay the nations? Just note in verse 15 the progression, the way it works up. They take all of them with the angle, with a hook, basically. Individual fish. They catch them, it says in verse 15, in their net. A host of fish. And gather them, it says, in their drag. And then that's describing professional fishermen. It's not just your amateur with his rod or group with their net. But it is professional, commercial, exhaustive fishing which drags up all of the fish, which leaves no room for escape. And that's what was going to happen. Babylon would do that. They would come and cherry-pick the best. They would take Daniel and his friends, and they would take them back to Babylon to make them Babylonians, to make them an aristocratic class within Babylon. And then they would come back and take the tradesmen, people whom they could use, people who had crafts, people who were upper middle class, if you like. And then they would come back and just sweep away everybody. Take them all. We'll use them as slaves. We'll use them for manual labour. It was what Babylon were going to do. And Habakkuk says, well, how can you expect anything else? Of course they're going to worship their net. It's what's brought them the gain. Of course they're going to sacrifice to their gods, because that's who they worship. That's who they are. That's what they do. Habakkuk recognises that the way of flesh is to seek instant gratification and to worship what they think gave it to them. And that was what Babylon would do. Of course they'll worship these things because they think they're giving them the victory. And then it says in verse 17, how are they ever going to stop? Shall they therefore empty their net and not spare continually to slay the nations? Why would they stop? They're just sweeping up everything before them, taking it all away, nation, people. Why would they stop? So chapter 2, verse 1 opens up with this picture of Habakkuk. He says, I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower and will watch to see what he will say unto me and what I shall answer when I am reproved. And it's interesting, isn't it? Habakkuk didn't think he'd get an answer he'd like. Habakkuk never thought that God was going to say, well, okay, then no, I'm not going to do that. Habakkuk believed the word of God. He was prepared to listen to it, prepared to hear it. And it's the same for us, isn't it? There are times when we go looking for an answer, when we can be almost certain that we're not going to get the answer we want. There are times when we can have a problem and we can look and know it's not going to be the simple way. It's not going to be the simple solution. Do we listen to the word of God in those situations? But I just want to finish with this picture of Habakkuk standing in his watch, standing in his place, standing in his tower. Rotherham says, I will station myself upon the bulwark. I'm going to stand and I'm going to look and I'm going to watch. And I'm going to see what God will show me. And I want to finish in Isaiah 21. Because this is just wonderful. In verse 2 of Isaiah 21, we're told, a grievous vision is declared unto me. The treacherous dealer dealeth treacherously, and the spoiler spoileth. We've had both of those phrases which have been used to describe Babylon in Habakkuk chapter 1. For instance, verse 13, Habakkuk says, wherefore lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously? Go up, at the end of verse 2, O Elam, besiege, O Media, all the sign thereof have I made to cease. It's a picture, and it's going to be a picture of the destruction of Babylon. Verse 9 tells us, behold, here cometh a chariot of men with a couple of horsemen. And he answered and said, Babylon is fallen, and all the graven images of her gods he hath broken unto the ground. Just look at verse 8. He cried a lion. My Lord, I stand continually upon the watchtower in the daytime, and I am set in my ward whole nights. And behold, here cometh a chariot. Babylon is fallen. Isaiah sees a man standing in his watchtower, looking out to see the destruction of Babylon that was to come. And it's a picture, isn't it, of Habakkuk? This is what he was doing. He's going to stand and he's going to watch. And he's going to see what God says. And what God says is, I'm going to destroy Babylon. And Habakkuk is going to see the destruction of Babylon before him as he stands on his watch. And it's exactly the same words as Isaiah uses in 21 verse 8. So that's where Habakkuk stops. And that's where we're going to leave Habakkuk. He's going to stand and he's going to watch. And we will see exactly what he sees when we come back in a fortnight's time, God willing.